If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Captain!
Car here.
Captain!
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery, a Star Trek podcast by the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Really Shatnering today.
Feels good.
I feel like I want to stretch it out because I'm scared of this episode. This
what?
Episode is cursed.
Why would you say that, Ben?
Because this is the third time we've attempted to record the episode about the first half of the Star Trek annual comic book.
Yeah.
And the first time we recorded an entire episode, and my half sounded like DJ Screw got his hands on it. It was all chopped and screwed, all glitchy and speeding up and slowing down. Something was very wrong with the audio file. Then we tried again, and my dog wouldn't shut up. And I think people that listen to The Greatest Discovery especially are familiar with my dog not shutting up. But this was like crazy.
This episode is being recorded underneath an open ladder.
Yeah. It's specifically that ladder that they tried to sell on QVC and it like nearly killed the guy that was climbing up it.
That was fun. Such a classic.
Yeah. Funny classic.
Are those guys still selling like swords on Home Shopping Network and just screaming about how they're made?
That's the other classic one, right?
Yeah.
Where he's like swinging it around and he accidentally catches himself.
How do you still have a show after that? That's amazing.
I don't know.
It's because no one else is willing to do it. I bet that's what it is.
How do you still have a network if you're QVC?
I mean, I think there are just a lot of old people in this country. I think that's the answer.
That want a set of nesting bowls with pour spouts? Think of the convenience.
You know what? If you're a bowl that doesn't nest, get the fuck out of here. No one needs you.
I watch Shark Tank and they talk about QVC as being like a major retail platform. Like, it may be true, but I have so little respect for it. Am I wrong? Is there good shit on there?
You know what? If QVC is such big shit, it should be on TV and hotels. Hotels are a place that you and I have been quite a bit while we're doing our greatest Gen Con tour. But
where's your home shopping?
But like if you're bored in a hotel room and you've just cranked it, like why not make an impulse purchase on some nesting bowls?
Yeah, give me some refractory QVC.
Give me some of those refractory bowls.
Show me a versatile garment that you can wear out on the town or to work.
I don't know what you're doing, QVC. I think we just gave you a ton of free ideas.
Get your shit together. You know, hire Ben and Adam, you know? And we're not wearing loaf. We're going to come on there and we're going to fucking set your shit straight.
I want to be careful. I think the appeal for a job that has the greatest chance of success is the QVC job. Because Team Star Trek certainly isn't picking up the phone.
No. Disappointed to say that we have not heard anything from our campaign to become hallway extras that get blown out into space.
I still have hope that our buddy J.K. Woodward is going to make that happen in print.
Oh, yeah.
I'll settle for print.
That's likely to happen, right?
Yeah.
Do you think that it's possible that a Star Trek executive is going to be like, man, I love the look of these two characters, JK, that you got blown out into space. Like, if we did that in the show, it's impossible, you know, because you made these two characters up. But, like, it would be awesome to, like, do that with actors that look kind of like them.
Like, is it possible to cast for these? I just don't know.
And then he'd be like, well, you could get Kyle MacLachlan and some dumb-looking dude.
When the Twin Peaks sequel was announced a couple years ago, I started a Twitter campaign for myself. Like, Adam Pranica, famously terrible at self-marketing, decided to spend an entire day on getting the hashtag flashback Agent Cooper trending. Because I figured if they're going to make this show, they're going to want to do flashbacks. And because Kyle MacLachlan has aged, he's still beautiful, let's be clear, still looking great, but like, you're not going to digitally de-age that guy, you're going to bring in Adam Pranica for that role, right?
That's what you do.
And so
you've got on-screen experience, right?
I came right up to the point of like, I found the casting agent that David Lynch usually uses for all his projects, and I had contact information for them, and I was like, I mean, it's a joke up until now. I mean, do I really want to take this next step? And Ben, I am ashamed to say I did not take the next step. Like, I had a headshot like ready to send.
Wow.
The hashtag had gotten a little bit of traction. It was funny to a lot of people. People were like in full support, but I didn't quite go all the way, and I wish I had.
That's a miss 100% of the shots you don't take kind of situation.
Yeah, I didn't take the shot, and I regret it. Now I'm here in obscurity doing a fucking Star Trek podcast. Meanwhile, I could be famous and successful.
Right. You'd be that guy from that thing that time.
I know. Instead, I'm who? And I'm who from What's a Podcast?
Well, it's like a radio show, but you download it onto your iPod.
Yeah, one question no one ever asks, Ben, is what's a comic book?
Nope. Those have been around for decades.
Yeah, not this one, though. This one's just been around since early 2018, Ben. Why don't we go ahead and get into Star Trek Discovery Annual 2018.
We're going to do the first 20 or so pages of this. I guess 20... Did we get to page 23?
Yeah, I think...
That's where we stopped?
Yeah, we picked a good place to stop, and it was after a pretty notably funny scene that we'll get to toward the end.
Yeah, it was sort of a Riker eyes to commercial type of feel. But this comic book begins in a little prologue, this is before the action, as is described in the comic book, and it is the USS Somerville out getting bombarded by asteroids. They sort of done what the Millennium Falcon is wont to do, which is enter an asteroid field, but they are not faring quite as well as the Falcon might.
No, they're getting bonked by a number of asteroids. Ben, this ship would be considered a dough scraper class starship if you were to just name it. It's and also I want to say, like, the Somerville probably populated mostly by Bostonians, right?
Right. Yeah.
You got assigned to the Somerville, yeah? Yeah. I hear the Somerville's a piece of garbage.
Captain Logs supplemental. There was no whining. We were collecting rare specimens from an unmapped asteroid belt when the rocks started spinning wildly.
My first officer Tommy couldn't get the ship into warp.
We took several rock hits to the window, so we had to replace several of the lights on this window. We went down to our local hardware store, bought laminated glass, scraped out the broken pieces, placed a replacement piece in, and fixed it in place with some latex glazing compound.
You know who on this ship looks like she's no stranger to glazing compound? The captain, who is rocking just like, if there's an amount of hair that can be like near the forehead, that forward hemisphere of one's head, boy, it is all there. She's got an incredible amount of hair going.
This is a hairstyle I dabbled with a little bit in college.
Oh, yeah? The Bieber?
I didn't remember having done this. I was sitting here thinking, I've had the same haircut since high school. And then I discovered recently some like old like camera phone pics from college. And I was like, oh, man, I was kind of Biebering a little bit.
I came to that same realization that I had had the same hairstyle too long, and what I did was changed which side the part was on.
I can't do that.
I went very drastic.
I wish I could. I have a weird cowlick on the other side. It makes it look like I'm like Conan O'Brien if I part my hair on the other side.
You gotta train it, man. You gotta make
no, it's,
make
it's
your hair.
It's not training, Adam. It's like my hair grows in a weird way on that one side.
My hair bows to my will.
You know how you have that whorl on the back of your head?
I do.
Where
yeah.
it kind of spirals?
My
I have
whorl?
Another one of those on my forehead that I have to cover up with the way I comb my hair.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Sure. I'm a double whorl.
You have whorls in front and behind.
Yeah, I'm whorling, coming and going.
The problem with the Somerville is that it's not just getting bonked by asteroid. It's got an away team on one of these asteroids.
Yeah, there are three people in Star Trek spacesuits with lunchboxes full of glowing samples, and they're waiting to get beamed up. This is very stressful. Something they don't really address in the comic book, which is that you can't beam through a shield.
Nope.
So presumably the Somerville has to drop shields and just take the hits. And in order to beam these bozos up.
Hey, you gonna try to beam through that shield, boss?
Yeah, good fucking luck.
Get fucked. This is the Somerville.
Beam yourself back to the Southie Projects, you piece of shit. But it kind of looks like on page two, it looks like it's going to be one of those situations where you run the transporter and the ship explodes in space, and there's that beat of uncertainty before everybody materializes in one piece on the transporter pad. But that is not what happens.
Yeah, we see some charred guys on the pad, and then we rack focus into the man on the man working the transporter. Ben, this is an O'Brien. That explains the transporter accident that's occurred here. The great-great-grandfather of of Chief O'Brien.
Yeah.
A man famous for not quite beaming someone safely.
Oh, O'Brien, of the transporter accident O'Briens. I've heard of your family.
You sound like some of your material, bud.
Lunchboxes that they were collecting these samples in, though, are clearly made out of the same material that you make the flight recorder for a jumbo jet.
Yeah, I bet they wish that their spacesuits were made of this stuff, right?
Yeah, why not make the whole spacesuit out of this material? The samples are okay, and the end of the prologue is Captain Somerville saying that she hopes that the samples are like a major breakthrough for science, and that the loss of life was, you know, not for nothing.
Go Sox. If this were an episode, I think what we'd get here is the theme song, because on the very next couple of pages, we've jumped forward in time a little bit.
Months later on the planet Deneva, it is Paul Stamets hanging out in a big, spacey, like warehouse size arboretum or a greenhouse or something.
Yeah.
And he's cultivating plants. He's talking to plants. Really kind of lost in himself. And then he gets interrupted by an assistant. And right off the bat is a huge dick to the assistant.
Yeah, if you thought the origin story for Paul Stamets would be like, I wonder what turned him into such a twit. Like, he was born that way.
Yeah, this asshole has been a major part of his.
Yeah. There is no Batman-style origin story where his parents are killed, and from then on, he's like just a total dick to people he works with.
You merely adapted being an asshole, Paul Stamets. I was born an asshole.
Bane. Why can't you just be polite to people?
The deal is that the samples that that the Somerville have collected have found their way to Paul Stamets's laboratory. He refers to this sample as Stella, and we get to meet his partner, Dr. Strahl, and they're pretty fucking pumped up about this sample. It's Prototaxites Stellivatori, a.k.a. Stella, for short, for funsies, you know?
Hey, it's a Stellivatori! you might recognize this Dr. Strahl as being the guy who died on the Glen that Paul Stamets was in communications with.
We actually seen this guy on FaceTime in the series.
Right.
And it's fun to see him as being part of the backstory.
Yeah, I like minor character callbacks like this.
I mean, one thing that, like, we knew that Stamets was a gay character going into Star Trek Discovery. That was, like, one thing that they were touting about the show. And I think early on in that series, the relationship he had with Dr. Strahl may have, like, confused me a little bit. It was like, is that the boyfriend? Like, has he got a long distance relationship with a boyfriend / collaborating scientist
on a different ship?
But it's not that. And it's interesting to get more dimension to this relationship in this comic book.
Yeah, Strahl drops right away that he's in a relationship with someone called Amelia, who, in addition to just not being very nice to Dr. Strahl, is also, like, professionally against his interests.
Yeah. Amelia is part of the terraforming operation that they currently work for, and she does not want them distracting themselves with this Stella business.
Yeah, and the Stella business is yielding some interesting results, right? It's doing that thing where if you poke one aquarium full of Stella, the aquarium across the room starts reacting. And so that seems to indicate that it could be networked together, and that network could be something that could be used in either communications or transport.
Right. The communications ramifications of it are pretty obvious, but Paul Stamets is pretty excited about the action at a distance. Like the protein is actually, like, appearing in the other sample when he puts it into the one sample, and that means that it's actually, like, moving something or replicating something. And you know, peppering that Einsteinian language in here is a lot of fun.
They are super hyped about the possibilities. And unfortunately, when they go to present their findings to big science, people are less than enthusiastic about their hypotheses, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a situation that I think we're familiar with, putting your dumb podcast on a keynote deck and plugging it in at some venue somewhere and showing it to people and them just crossing their arms and shaking their heads.
They're getting in-person one-star reviews here, and it doesn't feel good for either of them.
I'm just kidding. People like our live shows, I think. Hey, I think we're going to sell out our LA show, by the way.
I know we are. I'm confident in that.
That's some pretty hot shit. In fact, by the time this episode comes out, I'm going to predict there aren't any more tickets for our LA show.
Yeah, you'll never eat those words.
Well, I don't eat that much anymore. I'm in LA and I'm trying to watch my figure.
Strahl and Stamets, not a part of Starfleet at this moment in time, and yet it is Starfleet who is acting as the most critical of their findings. These guys are standing up, not asking questions, but making more comments, really, during the Q&A portion of the evening.
Yeah, and a lot of these Starfleet people are bald.
Yeah.
Did you notice that? Like, that there are, like, four Captain Picards in one shot at one point.
Yeah.
What's that about?
I don't know. I mean, if they're all Picards, I would expect them to be more open-minded than this.
Did they use their entire hair budget on that first captain that we saw in the prologue?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, anyways, there's a lot of dunking on Stamets and Strahl. They really don't think that they have dotted their I's and crossed their T's on this research, and it just seems like too good to be true, basically. Like, if these mushrooms do have an invisible root system that connects them to each other, no matter how far away they are, in time and space, then the idea of being able to use that as a transportation system is a too good to be true scenario. And that's kind of the reaction that they get.
Yeah. And the paradox is like, they're there to present a hypothesis so that they can get money to continue to explore the possibilities here. But they're being judged as if this is a fully formed theory and getting shit on for it.
Right.
Kind of a backfire. Ben, the one thing you want to do when you're dunked on is dunk on someone else, right? So at the reception a few hours later, Stamets is drowning his sorrows.
Yeah. He's doing that George Costanza thing of thinking of the witty retort way later.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody has their own little opinions and it all gets homogenized and you lose the whole logic.
And he sees a person on whom he can dunk sitting at the bar humming Castilian opera tunes.
Yeah, this is probably my favorite page in the portion of the comic that we read so far, just from a layout standpoint.
Yeah.
Because you've got kind of two major frames and then a couple of little close-ups inserted into them. But in the bottom one, Hugh Culber is kind of the most prominent character with Stamets down at the end of the bar in the background. And I love the way it flows, and I love the reveal of Hugh Culber.
What I don't like is the height of the bar stool, because it looks like Stamets is sitting at a regulation height bar stool. For some reason, Culber has jacked his seat up as if it were like a barbershop stool.
Yeah,
and he's sitting...
He's big dog in the bar.
What is that about? He has no room to swing his legs under it.
I don't know. I mean, but he's not doing that. He's sitting at a 90-degree angle to the bar, so he doesn't need to swing his legs under it.
What's he looking at? Like, if he's looking in our direction, where are we?
He is actually looking at book that he's reading. I believe it's actually the Star Trek Discovery Annual 2019, which isn't even out yet, man.
How'd he get his hands on that?
I don't know. He must know somebody at IDW. Do you think he knows JK?
I'm sure he knows JK. How could you not know JK? He's one of the best.
Yeah. Well, Hugh Culber is doing a fairly annoying thing to do in public, which is he's sitting by himself at a bar humming, and you know, it's like taking a business phone call in the waiting area at an airport. You know, it's just like you're inflicting it on everybody. We can't go anywhere because we're waiting to, you know, hear when our seating group is called. It fucking sucks. Don't do it.
Stamets has dunked on the wrong person because Culber can dunk right back. And so they're exchanging dunks on each other in public.
Yeah. As Stamets's disdain for Castilian opera has been established very early in this comic book, and now Hugh Culber is doing it, and Stamets uses that to rain shots down on him. Culber kind of storms out, having, you know, I mean, it was rude of Culber to be doing this in public, but also rude of Stamets to address it the way he did. They were very rude to each other at their meet cute, but the last frame of that scene is Stamets saying, "I like him."
This is one of those pages where you get a couple of different looks at the rendering of Anthony Rapp. So many of them are spot on, like perfect. But then the one in the lower right corner looks like he's gained quite a bit of water weight in the face, you know?
He's got a hell of a jaw on him.
Yeah, like lantern jaw isn't one of the ways I would describe Anthony Rapp, you know?
Yeah. It's swollen from a boxing injury.
You want a lantern jaw, pal? You get you get stationed on the Somerville.
So our next scene
we'll beat
is
your fucking ass.
Beat you into a pulp, you piece of shit. Our next scene is Dr. Strahl getting hit up by an Andorian Starfleet. Apparently, the disdain for their research was not universal in Starfleet, and this guy is saying, like, hey, like, we love this outside the box thinking that you're doing, and we think we could really help you. We could basically open up the fire hose of money and resources on your science project. What do you say?
Is this how Starfleet recruits? It's so weird to see like a hallway recruitment. Like, hey, Dr. Strahl. noticed you could use some money. How would you like to make money? And also your friends and family.
Now, the most important thing to say about this is that it's not pyramid selling. This is multi-level marketing. The way it works is simple. You recruit 7 friends, and then they recruit 7 friends.
Do you smell the fragrance I'm wearing? It smells like CK1, right?
Did you happen to notice the car I drove up in? It's because I'm very successful, Dr. Strahl.
Yeah, this has got to make Dr. Strahl think, right?
It's not because I am overextending myself to drive an expensive car to give the appearance of being successful. Perish the thought, Dr. Strahl. Perish the thought.
If I were truly successful, I wouldn't have vinyl stickers all over it with my phone number asking how you can join my business.
Yeah.
Like, true business success happens without vinyl stickers on your car. That's what I'll say.
Strahl, I want to come over to your house and spend a couple of hours of your time talking you into becoming a distributor. Would Tuesday be good for you? Do you work much during the work week?
Strahl's kind of desperate, though. He needs that hot cash injection.
Yeah. The first person he runs this by is his lady, Amelia, who's a very fancy lady. Like, the way she dresses really reminds me of Sarek's wife.
Right.
She's got a lot of, major chunky jewelry, and I guess mainly because we've seen her in very, formal contexts, so maybe this isn't how she dresses all the time, but they're always going to the opera or a fine white tablecloth dining scenario.
She could be considered not super supportive of his career idea that he's bouncing off of her.
Yeah, he's like, hey, listen, I know that I have a pretty successful video production company that services some major clients, but what I'd like to propose is that my friend Ben and I start a Star Trek podcast together and that become my full-time job.
Ouch. Yeah, she's not impressed, and part of it is she has a baseline distrust of Starfleet. The way she puts it is of course Starfleet will buy this. Starfleet is like a big whale taking ideas in, like krill.
Yeah.
Like, they just sort of dynamite fish science at this point. And
yeah, you don't want to be flushed through the baleen.
Sure don't.
To continue the whale metaphor, not the jumping over the dynamite fish metaphor.
Just I'm loading up the show with metaphors like so many pieces of krill. You see what I did there? I closed the loop.
You actually consume more than your own body weight in metaphors every day, despite metaphors being only a fraction of the size of you. It really boggles the mind how many individual metaphors you consume in a day.
Sure does.
So she's not necessarily Ferret, and neither is Stamets. You know, we'll catch up with him in a bit, but Stamets is heading back to Deneva, and he's in the shuttle bay at whatever space station they're at, and bumps into a certain dude. One Dr. Hugh Culber, who is now in his all-white everything Starfleet medical uniform and cutting a bit of a dash.
Yeah, this is sort of a re-meet cute, right?
Yeah, and the cuteness needle is pegged because now it is Stamets that is humming in public. And humming in public at the waiting area for getting on the airplane. So just basically the worst case scenario.
The hum is on the other foot this time.
Yeah, and Kasalian opera, no less.
Yeah, what a hypocrite.
But a cute hypocrite, because he's definitely humming it because he heard Hugh Culber humming it and is obsessed with Hugh Culber.
If the rendering of Stamets is great 9 out of 10 times, I think the Culber rendering is great 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
For some reason, they nail him.
They could really capture something about him.
I wonder if some faces are just easier to get, and it's not a factor of the artist's talent. And it's instead some faces are more unique.
I think that's true. I mean, Anthony Rapp's hair and skin tone are so similar.
Yeah.
Like, they have such a similar albedo that it's hard to like tell what his expression is occasionally because of that. And I think that could be a contributing factor. Who knows?
Yeah. A healthy albedo is so important as you age.
Yeah. You got to change it up. Do some exciting stuff. Maybe go out and like try to find a way to do it in public or, you know, or role play.
That's the first place you went. Yeah, maybe just try to take it outside once in a while.
Yeah. You know, pull into a rest stop on the highway.
Do everything you usually do. Just do it in the lawn.
Back at the lab, we get a little establishing shot of where these guys work, and it's clear that the Apple Donut campus has expanded to basically cover most of Cupertino. There are like 5 donuts visible.
Very annular compound by the looks of it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we recently learned the definition of annular.
Right.
Stamets is also resistant to the idea of joining Starfleet.
I get the sense that it would mean losing power over this thing. Like, he seems like a guy who is very possessive of his ideas.
Yeah.
And his science.
He doesn't want Kirk to steal the Genesis device from him.
Yeah. He would have to abandon the loss of Stella.
Yeah. So they have kind of an argument that ends in the idea that Paul is just like hard against it, full stop, like veto power. I'm not doing it. And he storms out and goes to the garden where they are cultivating the Stella spores. And this looks a lot like the one that we see in the show and on the disco.
Yeah. Kind of an unhealthy trait to get into a fight with someone, leave that argument, and then turn to substance abuse.
Yeah, and especially go try a drug that you've never tried before.
Yeah. Yeah, you can tell Stamets is super upset by this choice.
You can tell that Stamets doesn't have a lot on his plate because mushrooms take a long time. You know, like, you don't just do mushrooms on a whim, you know?
Yeah, you can tell he's definitely a freelancer.
Yeah, yeah, because he is like talking to himself while he's fiddling with these mushrooms, and he takes a little lick, and our final frame for this episode is him basically being engulfed in spores and like almost erotically climaxing.
That is a good place to stop, isn't it?
I think so.
Did you like this first half of a comic?
I did, yeah. I think we've talked about this a bit in the other comics we've read, but like there's something so great about having. I think this must be a function of having Christian Beyer on the writing team for these. Like, they really nail character tone,
right?
In these comic books, like everything that comes out of his mouth, you can picture Anthony Rapp delivering. It all sounds right and feels right. And Culber the same way. Like I know exactly like how the performance would look if they had actually shot this.
I wonder, as I was reading, if that's a function of how Stamets's dialogue is bubbled, because like his pace of speak when he's talking to plants, especially, like he can just monologue by himself. But right. The way they break up his dialogue into individual bubbles turns his red speech into something familiar from the show. It's super effective.
Right. There's like a rhythm to the way they separate each clause in the bubbles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I liked it too, Ben. I think it played a lot with the expectations that I had for it as well, because I was expecting more of a Stamets origin story than a science origin story, which is really, I think, what this is more than anything at this point. I mean,
right.
The second half of the comic could reveal something deeper about Stamets that we don't yet know. But I like getting to know the reason for Discovery's being at this point.
It's right.
A little less biographical than I would have expected, but good stuff.
If I have a criticism, it's that like the art style is just like a lot less consistent than other ones that we've read. I mean, like if you look at like page 12, there are 2 close-ups of Stamets' face in there that just don't look a thing like Anthony Rapp.
Mm.
And then, like, you go to the next page, and there's a couple pictures that do. And the next page after that. And I just think that, like, we got a little spoiled with, like, the Call of Tecumseh or whatever ones. Like, the art seemed to be really high level in that.
I think, like we said before, I think part of it might just be the difficulty in capturing this individual person.
Yeah, and I'm not talking shit. Like, obviously, I can't draw anything half as good as this, you know. I'm just saying, like, yeah, there are a couple of moments in this comic book the first time I read through where I was like, wait, is this a new dude or, oh no, that's supposed to be Stamets, you know, and that's a little unfortunate.
And another way I'll defend the artwork or the image of Stamets in this comic is that, like, you've got to render him 200 times or whatever. Like, he is someone who is on every page of the book, yeah. And like, you need so
from
many
all these
different
angles
and in different light. So yeah, degree of difficulty seems a lot higher here in its defense.
Fair.
Do we have any Priority One messages at this point, Ben?
I don't believe we do, Adam.
Well, that's too bad, because Priority One messages are the main way that one can support the ongoing production of The Greatest Discovery. If you like what we're doing here and want to hear more, you can go to MaximumFun.org/donate and check the Greatest Discovery box.
Please do that. You know, like, what the fuck are you people doing not supporting the show?
Yeah, if you're already a supporter of The Greatest Gen and Friendly Fire, thanks. But if you haven't yet supported Greatest Discovery, we would appreciate it.
Yeah, we've kept the torch lit all these months in between new episodes of the show, and I think we've been having a lot of fun doing it, and we really appreciate the people who do support. So
we believe this show to be worthy of your attention.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What are we doing on the next episode of The Greatest Discovery, Adam?
Oh, I think we got to finish up this comic, Ben. I think that's obvious. Yeah. This annual isn't over.
Yeah.
This annual is going to be thorough.
It's a good annual.
We're going to be on the exam table for a long time.
So we'll finish this, and then the one after that will probably be the next short trek, right?
Yeah. Yeah, our timing is just right now. We're in total alignment with the Star Trek Discovery show.
I'm really looking forward to both things, and come see us on tour. We got a handful of dates left this year. Really excited about those.
And with that, we'll send it on over to Rob.
Yeah, take it from here, Rob.
The Greatest Discovery is a Maximum Fun podcast hosted by Adam Pranica and Ben Harrison. It's produced and edited by me, Rob Schulte, and our theme music is by Adam Ragusea. Head on over to MaximumFun.org/donate to support the ongoing production of our show, or you can leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. You can find Ben on Twitter at BenjaminAHR, Adam is at CutForTime, and I'm at Rob K. Schulte. Please use the hashtag GreatestGen or GreatestDiscovery when tweeting about the show. See you next time.
Ma-
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.